Last week, we traced many of the Ramazim in the Sfarim HaKadoshim connecting these parashiyos of Mechiras Yosef to the Yantav of Chanukah, which always coincides with the season. And we are going to expand and elaborate and trace more, a larger trail of Ramazim, exciting Ramazim, in this week's parsha, and interpret them. And what's important to remember is Remez is real. Remez is one of the methodologies of Torah, Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod. And there's an art to interpreting Remez. Ramazim are not just cutesy mnemonics. One of the major Ramazim we were working with last week actually relates to this week's parsha, and that is when the family of Yosef finally reunites. All the brothers are together in Mitzrayim. Now, mind you, most of the brothers don't know this. Only Yosef knows it. As far as they're concerned, they are with Tzafnas Paneach, the Egyptian viceroy, who's actually Yosef in disguise. But the point is, the brothers are all together, and they're clearly bonding as a family, as we put it last week. A meal is a social lubricant, especially a familial social lubricant. The great family things happen around the dinner table, and Yosef places them in birth order, with everything birth order conveys in terms of the family structure. He's clearly trying to be ma'achad them, remold them as a family which had been dissented, ripped apart, now melted together as one. And this Suda is seen by the Rishonim as one of the Makoros for a Masibas Chanukah. Because the Pasuk says in this week's parasha, in preparation for this meal, Utavoach Tevach V'Hachin, prepare a slaughtering, the final Ches of Tevach, followed by the words V'Hachin, spell Chanukah, the letters Ches Nun Vav Chav Hei. And we were discussing that last week in the context of the Machlokas between Yosef and his brothers, and we were explaining how the brothers, particularly Shimon and Levi, who instigated his Mechira, well, that faction represents the Chashmonaim, the same Shimon and Levi who killed out Shechem, and an unmistakable foreshadowing of Rab and Biad Miatim, two Jews take on an entire city. Well, we were discussing this concept that you have one branch of the family, which is the branch of Kanaim, those who believe in insulation and fighting off unwanted influences, which they mistakenly believe in Yosef as well, as we developed it last week. That's one faction, which must come together in this meal with the other faction. The Yosef faction, we connected Yosef to the candle, to the menorah. Yosef is called Lahava in the Pasuk, and we discussed several Ramazim in which the candle, the Lahava Yosef, links to the Ner Chanukah. One commonly known Ramaz is the Gemara in Shabbos, which right after it discusses that a Ner Chanukah may not be placed above 20 Amos. It then quotes the famous statement about Yosef being thrown into the pit. Yosef was thrown into the pit without water. It wasn't water, there were snakes. Somehow appears in the context of a Ner Chanukah. Now, aside from technical correlations in that Gemara, it's the same Amora who spoke about the menorah above 20 Amos, then speaks about Yosef thrown into the pit. Mefarshim understand there's a deeper connection, and perhaps even Yosef's pit was a pit which was 20 Amos deep, in which the brothers could not see the snakes and scorpions in the bottom, just as one is unable to see the menorah above 20 Amos. But on a deeper level, the correlation between the menorah and Yosef, when Yosef is in fact himself called Lahava, is very, very compelling. And the way we developed it last week is unlike the other faction of the family, which believes in insulation, fighting off unwanted influences, Levi the progenitor of the Chashmonaim, Yosef believes in being Meir Klapei Chutz, illuminated. Yosef is beautiful. Yosef is active in the world. Yosef radiates into the outside world. He becomes the viceroy of Mitzrayim, and so forth. Well, let's trace a more expansive trail of Ramazim, as last week's parsha, Vayeshev, segues into this week's parsha. Parshas Vayeshev ends last week with poor Yosef languishing in prison, he placed his faith in the Saramashkim, the royal butler that he'd help him, Vayishkecheyu, he forgot him. And that word, Vayishkecheyu, Yosef's forgotten, Yosef, and the potential Yeshua of Yosef is forgotten, carries a certain Chanukah echo, Shechecha l'hashkichem Torah Secha, the Yevanim sought for us to forget Torah. It's an inviting clue of correlation, considering we're already primed to taste Chanukah clues, and a clue which becomes even more compelling when we consider something else. The term Shechecha, forgetfulness, which with its Chanukah association, l'hashkichem Torah Secha, is not freestanding. We are taught that Yavan has the midah of Choshech, darkness. The term in Maisa Bereishis, in the four primordial gloomy terms of Maisa Bereishis, before Hashem develops a beautiful world. V'aretz Eisa Tov, Vavo, V'choshech, Alpnei Tahom. Right? Choshech Zu Yavan, darkness is Yavan. They think they're beautiful, they think they are, they think they're a movement of enlightenment, but they're really darkening the Jewish people's eyes because they snuff out spirituality. Ein lechem chelek b'elokei Yisrael. Well, Choshech and Shechecha share the same letters, Ches, Shin, Chaf, Ches, clearly connected, especially when we consider that when a person forgets, they are in a sense in the dark, right? The information which they forgot exists, but it's elusive from them, just as when you're in the dark, the place where you want to be or the person you want to connect to exists, but they are elusive. In the dark, Choshech Shechecha are clearly connected, both etymologically and conceptually. Well, why is that relevant to the Yosef story? Yosef is languishing in prison and called forgotten. Well, the Medrash Rabbah applies to Yosef the Lashon Choshech. It says in the beginning of this week's parasha, Miketz, when Yosef is going to leave prison, Vayehi Miketz, it was the end, cites the Medrash, the Pasuk, Ketzam L'choshech. Hashem placed an end to darkness. Ketzam L'choshech, Miketz, is an allusion. Yosef's prison sentence, Choshech, is over. Here we have a confluence of Vayishkecheyu. Yosef is forgotten in prison, and Yosef's prison sentence is called darkness too, segueing into our parsha, when an R happens. Yosef's Choshech and Shechecha turns into R, which is particularly poignant because, as we said, Yosef is our Yosef is Lahav with all the Chanukah connotations. And the connection between Yosef and Shechecha, Choshech, and so forth, his Lahava, which illuminates the dark, becomes even more compelling when we trace more clues of correlation. Again, in the art of remes and tracing patterns, the more clues surface, while clues begot clues, and even more expansive pattern develops. Right now, primed to focus on that word Shechecha or Choshech in Yosef's life. Well, in the beginning of this week's parsha, when Yosef interprets Paro's dream and the dramatic image of seven fat cows swallowed by seven scrawny cows, and he says you can't even notice the fat cows within the scrawny cows. It's as though they're not there. And Yosef interprets that to mean, yeah, the seven fat years, the 7 years of plenty, followed by the 7 years of empty. Well, the 7 years of empty will be such a profound famine that you'll forget about. You'll have shechecha, v'nishkach. You will forget everything which is plentiful. Here we have another reference to shechecha in the greater Yosef story. Yosef is interpreting shechecha, and Yosef is going to address that shechecha. Because when Yosef is empowered as viceroy to deal with the 7 year issue, the 7 years of plenty followed by the 7 years of famine, and he says during the 7 years of plenty, store food for the 7 years of plenty. He's ensuring, when you really think about it, that the 7 years of plenty won't be forgotten during the 7 years of empty, because he's saving the foodstuff from the 7 years of plenty to be available during the 7 years of empty. So he is addressing the shechecha. I would argue that is significant, again, especially because we're primed already with a Chanukah focus, a Shechecha focus, and Shechecha already looming large in the Yosef story. One final reference to removing Shechecha in the Yosef story, and again, the way a pattern works, I'm reiterating this for pedagogical purposes and teaching, tracing, drash patterns, remes patterns, is a real art, not as loose homiletics, right? Each one of these clues surfacing strengthens the other one, like links on a chain or on a necklace, where each link tightens the one next to it, right? Each new discovery tightens the adjacent one, Right, so each reference to Shech v'Choshech in the life of Yosef, the Lahava, the Ner Chanukah, tightens the other. Well, let's consider, if you return to that phrase regarding the Chanukah Masiba, the virtual Chanukah Masiba, if we could call it that, which Yosef has with the Shvatim at the end of the parasha, Tzvach Tavach Ha'achain, that reference to the Chanukah Masiba. Family sits together for a Chanukah Masiba. Well, the Gemara tells us in Chulin, these very words with Tavach Tavach Bahachin, which are darshan to be a reference to a Chanukah Masiba by Rishonim, says the Gemara in Chulin, these words mean Yosef is saying, remove the Gerhanasha. He tells his servants, when you prepare the meat, make sure you remove the Gerhanasha. Now here we have the Gerhanasha surfacing in the Yosef story, but specifically in the Chanukah Masiba story. These very words, Tvach Tavachim, where instead is a remnant to the Chanukah Masiba. And you recall in our shir 2 weeks ago, in Parshas Vayishlach, we traced how the story of Gerhanasha, right? Remember the Gerhanasha is the commemoration of Yaakov's battle with the Sar Shalesov. We already learned that that story is riddled with Chanukah references, right? The Sar Shalesov attacked Yaakov when he was looking for the Pach and Ketan and the small jars, which the Shlosses and others say are a remnant to the Pach Shemen of Chanukah, and he touched him in the Gerhanasha, which the Medrash says is a reference to Doro Shel Shmad, right? The place where the Sar Shalesov was able to attack Yaakov, the place of Yaakov's vulnerability to Esav and the nemesis. Well, that's a reference to Shmad. Jews will struggle with the threat of assimilation, which is clearly the Chanukah threat, right? So in that context, we have Gerhanasha. Why am I fixated and focused on that? Because one of the interpretations in Rishonim of the word Nasha means to forget. The term appears regarding the Gerhanasha. It also appears regarding Yosef's son Menashe in this parsha, Kimishanani Elokim. One of the renderings is, it's a lashon of forgetfulness. In case of the Nasha, Yosef was saying, Hashem allowed me to forget all of my pain. Gerhanasha, the sinew, which jolted, well, that jolted dimension is seen as forgetfulness. When you jolt from the previous knowledge of something to a different place. That is what some of the Rishonim say. So the term Gerhanasha means forgetfulness itself. It is in that first skirmish between Yaakov and the Malach, which has Chanukah references. It's reappearing in the Tvach Tavach V'Hachin in our Parashah Alpi, the Gemara in Chulin, which is a Chanukah Masiba. Well, now we're beginning to understand, indeed, the Yosef story is all about avoiding Shechacha, forgetfulness. Because Shechacha is Choshech and Yosef is Ar. Yosef is the Chanukah menorah. Yosef is coming to ensure that we maintain that perception of truth, of the truths of Yiddishkeit, and never forget it. There's no Vayishkachayu. And let's continue to trace the patterns in our parsha, in the Yosef story to Chanukah. I'm going to argue that the image of, in Paro's dream, of the seven fat cows swallowed by the seven scrawny cows, well, you can't help but have a Chanukah association. The irony that strong, fleshy cows are being swallowed by scrawny cows. Well, that's clearly Iborim Biad Chaloshim, strong in the hands of the weak. Now, why is that significant? Why is the Iborim Biad Chaloshim appearing here? That needs a lot of explanation. We'll get there. Now let's just trace the patterns. As we said, each link in the pattern strengthens the other. Let's consider another thing as well. Let's consider that the cows. Well, cows are symbolizing Mitzrayim here. Mitzrayim in its stage of plenty, Mitzrayim in its stage of famine. A fat and skinny cow would seem to connect to a fat or skinny Mitzrayim. Well, why in the world is Mitzrayim being compared to a cow of all things? Well, that seems to make sense because it's a pasuk in Yirmiyah that compares Mitzrayim to a cow. Egla Yafifia, right? Mitzrayim is called a beautiful cow. Well, that's very interesting, because a cow here is conveying beauty and the beauty of Mitzrayim, right? Which is, by the way, a little ironic, because parenthetically, I'll note elsewhere we're told that the Mitzrayim were very ugly, right? When Avram brings Sarah into Mitzrayim, Rashi says Avram's so concerned that Sarah's going to be nabbed and abducted because the ugly Mitzrayim are not used to a beautiful woman. It must be the beauty of Mitzrayim is more fixation on beauty than their part that they're actually beautiful. Perhaps this is alluded to in the Malbim there in Yirmiyahu, who says the Mitzrayim worshipped the beautiful cow, right? Beauty as represented by a cow is a subject of their adoration and idolization rather than what they are. Again, perhaps reflecting a complex they have with their own specimenhood that in turn they're worshiping beauty. But the point is, however you explain it, Mitzrayim is represented as a cow, which is a symbol of beauty. Egla Yafifia. Now, is that not significant to the Hanukkah story, which is all about beauty and all about the theme we've discussed in the past? Yavon is a nation of beauty. We know the Greeks were very into aesthetics and a logical system of symmetry and beauty. The very term Yavon is read backwards in Sfar Makdoshim as Nai, beauty, their worship of beauty. They get a sense from Yefes, Milashin, Yofi, on one hand. And Yosef is also called beautiful. Yefas Tar, Yefas Mar, just as his mother Rachel was called beautiful. He is the beauty L'Kedusha, they are the beauty L'Ra, as we've traced in the past in the context of Yosef and Hanukkah. So is it not interesting to note that Mitzrayim, as a model of subsequent Galus, as we're taught, right, in the context of the Yosef story, is being envisioned as a beautiful cow. Right? Beauty, a mita of Yefes and Yavon. Is that not intriguing within the greater Yosef Hanukkah construct? Especially when you consider that Yosef himself is symbolized by a cow, Parshar Hadalo, right? Sure, Yosef is symbolized by a cow, right? As we discussed last week, a cow represents the beauty of Yosef, also the potential of descendants of Yosef to sin and bring in beautiful foreign influences such as an Egel Hazav, which arose with the placard of Yosef, which said Ali Shur, Yeravim ben Avot, who introduces a golem into Klal Yisrael. So Yosef's beauty and engagement with the outside world, which could go astray, right? Everything which provoked his brother Shimon and Levi, as we discussed last week. Everything Yavonesque, which Yosef himself is able to combat, others struggle, perhaps even his own descendants struggle with. That all comes together in a beautiful cow, and is all connected to Yavon, because as we said last week, the way Yavon challenged Bnei Yisrael, we're told in the Medrash, is they said, "Kisvu lachem al keren hashar," engage on the horn of a shar, she'en lachem chilk b'alkei Yisrael. They had the Jews pick up a shar, which we know is supposed to represent the Yegel, as Rashi says in the Medrash. They tried, in their efforts to impose Hellenism on the Jews, they really imposed upon them, or symbolically they imposed upon them, the shar, the ego, the beauty of the shar and the ego, the Yosef gone awry, the idolization of beauty, as we discussed last week. Well, I believe that's all coming together in this week's Parsha Chanukah time, when Mitzrayim, as a forerunner of Yavon, Mitzrayim represents all the goals which came after, like the Maral says, is specifically being visioned as a cow and a symbol of beauty, right? And perhaps these Cal, Mitzrayim, Yosef, Hanukkah correlations all come together in the Mosor. We're going to say tonight, when the Mosor speaks about Golos Mitzrayim, of all ways to describe the Mitzrayim, it calls Mitzrayim Malchus Egla, the Malchus of the Cal, clearly referencing that pasuk in Yirmiyah I said before, and perhaps this week's parasha Mitzrayim has seven cows. Specifically in Mosor, a Hanukkah text, Mitzrayim is being envisioned as a cow, right? I believe tying together this whole pattern, right? So that was a little intricate. It's patience, right? But here we have more Hanukkah clues in the story. I'll leave you with one more Hanukkah clue. There are more, but we'll suffice with one more Hanukkah clue before we move on. And that is the second stream of power, not the cows, but the sheaves of wheat, the seven full, robust sheaves of wheat, swallowed by the seven eisgeschmatten, as we would say, battered up sheaves of wheat. So there are seven sheaves, and it says that these seven sheaves, at least the beautiful ones, anyway, in the first stream, the seven beautiful sheaves, are descending, are emerging bakana echad, from one reed. Seven lines emerging from a kana, from a reed. What does that echo? That's certainly the menorah. Seven emerging from a kana. That is exactly the term describing the center of the menorah. It was called a kana, and there were seven reeds going off. Again, would have we known to interpret this as a Hanukkah Rambam without the greater picture and the Penguin Primes by Kadmonim that there are Hanukkah Rambam here this time of year and having traced the others themselves? I don't know, but certainly within the given picture, this jumps all over the place. This leaps right off the page, right? The seven lines of the Sheaves by Kanachat. So suffice it to say, we have traced quite a few new Hanukkah Rambam in this week's parasha, which beckons for further depth and further study. Why is it significant other than cutesy patterns? Just to excite us further, just to kind of stir up the pot further, I'm going to switch gears on us here. There are not only many Hanukkah Ramazim in this week's Parsha Nigrei in the Chiras Yosef story, but many Ramazim. And I'm going to really challenge us with the relationship between Hanukkah and Purim and how Hanukkah and Purim share certain qualities and are different in the context of this week's Parsha, really. Where we're going to see Ramazan now to Purim as much as we've seen Ramazan to Hanukkah. Take a look at this. Oh, it's very obvious that Yosef's ascension as viceroy is a foreshadowing of Mordechai, and to a degree Esther. The notion of a Jew infiltrating a foreign government, the Gullus government, for Yeshua's Yisrael to enable greater interest in the Jewish people. In the Yosef case, to enable that the family will be supported well in Mitzrayim, though they need to come down to Mitzrayim, it will be from a place of security. In the case of Mordechai and Esther, to save Klal Yisrael. Very clear correlation, especially when you consider Mordechai and Yosef are both literally the Mishnah Lamelech, literally the viceroy, the same exact position. Yeah? And the correlation becomes even more snug and more powerful when you read the Lashonos in the Pesukim. It says this week's parasha, Vayaser Tabato, Paro removes his ring and puts it onto Yosef. Now that's the big word in the Megillah, the removal of the king's signet ring and the affixing it on the viceroy, first Haman and then Mordechai. What happens with the viceroy Yosef already, right? And then it says, and Vayal Bishayu, he dresses Yosef in beautiful garments. Of course, the dressing of Mordechai in beautiful garments, in the royal garments, when he mounts the horse. Therein lies the glorious moment, right? In the pendulum shift in the story there, the fall of Haman and the rise of Mordechai. And it says in our parasha, when Yosef becomes viceroy, he has a special chariot to ride on as viceroy, the Yisrael of Avrich. It's a royal proclamation as he rides the chariot. I would argue that that's also a foreshadowing of Mordechai. When Mordechai rides the horse and there's a kriya, there's a proclamation in front of him, kachayas elish. Perhaps each of these correlations in themselves you might want to shrug it, but as a greater picture, signet ring, clothing, and riding a royal riding instrument, be it a horse, be it instruments, be it horse, be it chariots, with a proclamation in front of you, I think that's pretty compelling. And I believe all of these correlation underlies the Chazal. When the Chazal says in the Gemara Megillah, in the interpretation in the Pasuk in this week's Parsha, that when Yosef gives Binyamin five garments, Hamisha Chalifos Smolos, and it says, what is he doing? He is foreshadowing what's going to happen to Binyamin's descendant Mordechai in the five special garments he's going to wear. But it's more than simply a correlation. It is saying that Yosef is bequeathing to Binyamin everything Yosef was his viceroy, as reflected by all of these correlations. And there are more Purim correlations in our story. Whether in the frightful scene when Yaakov doesn't want to let Binyamin, right, the ancestor of Mordechai and Esther, go, and Yaakov just seems to succumb to the inevitable, and he says, Kasher Shakalti, Shakalti. Right, as I've been bereft childless, I'll be bereft childless. That is such an echo to Esther's melancholy yish, kasher avarati avarati. Right, a double statement of accepting the inevitable. Kasher shakalti shakalti kasher avarati avarati. Share with you a couple quick additional Purim correlations. I think Yosef in disguise is certainly like Esther in disguise, where in the royal palace or in the royal government, you have a Jew who's there, Yeshua's Yisrael, but no one knows it. right? Sophras Pinchas, Yosef in disguise, is going to be correlated to Esther, the Jew in disguise, Lohigita Esther, Molata, right? Okay, perhaps there's some inversions, you know, Yosef asas Sophras Pinchas disguised from his brethren, Esther was disguised from the Persians in Ahasuerus, but the correlation is there. I would argue the scene in this week's parsha when Yosef almost spills the beans because he's so emotionally overtaken, right? He almost reveals himself to his brothers when he, right? And it says, Vayesapak, Yosef holds it in and doesn't reveal it himself to his brothers. That term, Vayesapak, is a very rare term. It appears, of course, regarding Haman in the Megillah, when Haman wants to lash out and kill Mordechai, but he knows the king might not let, he needs permission. And it says, Vayesapak, come on, right? Of course, there's a very funny inversion going on here. The Vayesapak, Yosef is holding himself back from doing something prematurely for Yeshua, Yisrael, revealing his identity to his brothers. Haman, who's on the other side, inversely, is suppressing an urge to do something, Litzaras Yisrael, and kill Mordechai, but that is all part of the symmetry and the pattern here, right? In the many, many correlations between the Purim story and our parsha. And of course, it's significant in the whole buildup in our parsha, everything being, the whole stage being set for next week's parsha of Vayigash, when Yosef is ultimately going to have Binyamin kept in Mitzrayim here. And it is Yehuda who's going to draw near and going to tussle with Yosef. So notice that the subject here has morphed from Yosef to Binyamin. Yosef makes Binyamin the subject here, which is very significant to Purim and everything he's bequeathing to Binyamin and Binyamin's descendants, sons Mordechai and Esther. And it's Yehuda who's being latched on to the Binyamin-Yosef combo. Well, that is very interesting when in the Megillah we have this notion of Mordechai being called a Ishimini and a Yehudi, right? Which is a big, 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 big Purim theme. There's more to say here, but I think we've proven our case. A lot of Hanukkah clues, a lot of Purim clues in the Yosef story, and the question is, why? Why is Yosef so integral to Hanukkah and Purim alike? And how at the same time, though he's joining Hanukkah and Purim, does his story reveal the differences in focus between Hanukkah and Purim? So this is what I would like to suggest. We've discussed the last few weeks Yosef and really his mother Rachel are called Alma de Iskalia by the Tikkun Zohar, the revealed world. The favored, obvious wife and obvious son, the beautiful ones revealed, Rachel, Yosef, while Leah and her children are called Alma de Iskalia, the hidden world, the less obvious wife, the less beautiful one, and so forth. Now, there are many, many questions to be asked. Of course, in my shiurim the last few weeks, whenever I developed this Tikkuni Zohar, Talmidei Chachamim and thinking individuals in the audience always ask me different questions. For example, they ask me, is Leah not called the Yatsanis? Leah goes out, right? Leah has this urge to go out to greet Yaakov and bring him to her, right? And on the other hand, we have Rachel is a Tznua. Rachel has the Midah of Tznius, we're told, when she doesn't reveal the Simanim. So this seems to be the inverse. Leah, who's from the hidden world, is called the Yatsanis, the one who goes out. Rachel from the revealed world is a Tznua, the one who holds back and conceals herself, right? And bequeaths that Midah of Tznius to her descendant, Esther, who doesn't reveal her identity. And there are other questions to be asked here in this regard, whether it's the Gemara, which says Yehuda was Kiddush Shem Shemayim Befarhesya, Yehuda brought a public Kiddush Hashem when Yehuda's descendant Nachshon jumped into the Yam Suf, while Yosef brought a private Kiddush Hashem when he held himself back from Ashes Potiphar. That seems to inverse the model. Yehuda, the descendant of Leah, is in the revealed world. Yosef, the descendant of Rachel, is in the hidden world. Seser. All of these questions can be resolved. I'm not going to have time to fully develop them. I'll give you a very quick answer and quick resolution. The concept of Tznius, which is a midah of Rachel and her descendants, means something is left to itself, going to be revealed, and you have to actively suppress it. It's actively suppressing something that's going to be revealed. Something which is hidden away, you don't use the word sneeze to describe money that's in a safe. It's just not available, not acceptable. Sneeze means you are being modest and you are impeding revelation that would otherwise happen. Right? It is specifically Nashim women who the Gemara says live in the realm of practicality, pragmatism, and so on, who have guf and knowledge of the real world, who have a midah of tznius. It's if you live in the external real world that you need tznius. You have yofi, you have beauty as a woman has, you need tznius. Tznius reflects that inherently there is appeal klapei chutz. That is why, because Rachel is alma to Heskali, the revealed world, right? Naturally, everything about her would be revealed. Her beauty, the secret she knows, so on. Well, they have to be, you need an active midah of tznius if you live in the revealed world. And likewise, Yosef, who lives in the revealed world, right, he's mekadesh shem shamayim when he suppresses the yetzahara not to be a tzanilat, specifically when he overcomes the aver with Ashes Potiphar and seemingly is going to lose tznius. His kiddush shem shamayim to seser is really correlated to his mother's tznius. A hiddenness of tznius, suppressing not to be too revealed, right? It's specifically the one living in the revealed world who needs a midah of tznius for clarification. And on the other side, the notion of Leia and Yehuda sometimes being yatsanus and leaving in public, that too could be dealt with from a broader perspective. I'll touch on this very quickly. Yehuda's midah ultimately bequeathed to him by Leia, we are taught as the midah of Malchus, kingship, which in Kabbalah, Malchus means one can express things, one can get things done, but it's not about them. It's by the higher virtues they come from. In a Kabbalistic sense, the midah of Malchus, ein la migarma klum, does not have anything itself. It's simply executing the higher midos of Hashem, chachma, bina, das, and so on. A melech is very active in the outside world, but it's never to express himself. It's always to express the greater national qualities of the people. So whenever Leia or Yehuda are active on the outside, it's with their midah of Malchus, which means they don't really have a self they're revealing. They are active for their deep internal source, whether it's Vatetze Leia, Leia goes out not to promote herself, but to bring Yaakov to her. She's really living internally for Yaakov, not living for herself. And certainly Yehuda, as reflected in the story of Nachshon, I don't have the time to develop it now, but in that story, which bequeaths Malchus to Klal Yisrael, Haisi Yehuda l'kadsh Yisrael mam shalosav hayam ra vayanas. Jump, when he runs into the yam, as the Gemara interprets that pasuk, he becomes a king. Well, kingship, the Mekubalim say, is all about being active in bittul of oneself, working in national affairs without a sense of self. That's what emerges in that story. Yehuda and Leah's externality is not because they are external and not because they are self-affirming. It's actually because they're bittul. Okay, so suffice it to say, we have a concept of integrity here. Rachel and Yosef are inherently revealed. Be active in the world, promote yourself when you represent Kedusha, radiate klapei chutz. Leah and Yehuda are really about bittul of selves. It's just they have a midah that when the inner quality, the pnimius, is in order, they submit themselves to be a screen of revelation. Now, with all of that in mind, you could think of these two camps in the Jewish people as follows. Yehuda is really internality. As we've discussed in the past, his name reflects Hodah. His mother taught the quality of Hodah. Hodah means submission, concession, being mevatel oneself, and turning inwards. Well, internality is most relevant when there is a pnimius in Klal Yisrael, when the Jewish people are not flung into the outside world, when we have a Beis HaMikdash, we have our place of pnimius, we're living in thriving circumstances. So then we have pnimius. Then Our connection, our conduit on high is very firm. We live really in Pnimius. And then you could have the Midah of Malchus, right? You could have Yehuda picking up on the Pnimius, picking up on his source, and ruling as David, as Mashiach will one day. When the Pnimius is in order, then you could have this model of the B'nai Leia, reflecting the Pnimius which is present, and even radiating it. However, when we live in a matziv, that's not ideal. Times of Golus, the end of the period of Torah Shebaksav, which is what Purim and Chanukah are all about, right? Less overt and open miracles, as Purim ushers in, right? The Pnimius is not really present. You don't have that conduit on high, right? We're living in a chitzoniistic world, detached from Kedusha. We have to be able to find a portal which is external, that even in the world of externality, we're still connected on high. That's where Yosef comes into the picture. And that's why Yosef, really the descendants of Rachel in general, are always the kings in imperfect circumstances. Yosef in Mitzrayim, Mashiach ben Yosef and Sof HaGolus, descendants of Binyamin, such as Mordechai and Esther and so forth. So I'm going to argue in a Purim or a Chanukah story, which is the end of the open miracles of Torah Shebaksav. Purim is the end of the period of Torah Shebaksav. Chanukah is totally beyond Torah Shebaksav. Nevi'im are not present. Yosef looms very large. Now is a period when we need to learn how to bring out Kedusha in the outside world, in the world of Chitzonius. It's a period of Yosef. Now, this Yosef, or B'nai Rachel quality, is in a sense even more dominant when it comes to Purim. The protagonists of the Purim story are clearly Mordechai and Esther. You don't have another Jewish protagonist of that stature, Mordechai and Esther, who are from Binyamin. Their Yehuda title is by association, right? They are per se B'nai Rachel. You know why? That is because Purim is the time of the greatest Chitzonius. Think about it. In the story of Purim, we are literally in Chutz La'aretz. We don't have any Beis HaMikdash. Any miracle is totally Nes Nestar. What is threatened? Not the Jewish people's ruchnius, the Jewish people's bodies. Right? You see a greater picture developing here. It's a very superficial time. We're living in a superficial world without a Beis HaMikdash. Right? What's being targeted? Our superficiality, our bodies. Purim is celebrated through bodies because ultimately we're going to find Hashem even in Guf. The Persians themselves, the Maral says, are a nation all about Guf. That's where our nemesis is. You see a greater picture. Purim is a time of conclusive and absolute chitzonius. No Beis HaMikdash, no open miracles. We're living in a culture of Guf, which is Paras, the Persians, which did not have wisdom. They just had hedonism, as the Maral says. Right? So all that exists, really, at least all that's revealed is the body, chitzonius mamash, but even in the body, there's Kedusha. That's what Purim is about. Hashem in the Teva, right? No open miracles, but Hashem is active in royal affairs in the Persian court, right? Hashem is even active in bodily affairs. Hashem is even active to save Jewish bodies. On Purim, we show greatest Kedusha through celebrating the body, Simcha and Mishta. That's Purim, right? Because as the Gemara says, right? Ma neshama mamala sagof av kadosh baruch mamala sa'olam. Just as the neshama fills the body, Hashem fills the world. The world is really as though the divine body. The world too, and bodily affairs too. The world affairs are like the body. Right, Hashem being active in Dvarim Gashmiim and worldly affairs intrigues the Persian court. Well, that aligns with the body and the bodily focus of Purim. Hashem is Mamala the Olam. So worldly affairs can be an expression of Elokus, and we reflect this very powerfully on Purim when we celebrate, when we have bodily celebrations, right? And we insist this is holy. The neshama's mamala the guf. The divine fills the body. Our bodily affairs are consummately soul-like because that is the theme of Purim. even in the most superficial chitzoni stick around, there's divine presence. That's why when it comes to Purim, which is utter total chitzoni, is the B'nai Rachel, Yosef, and Binyamin are the model. We need to find Hashem therein. Any association to Yehuda is just an association. We're called Yehuda, right? In the Malchus of Esther and Mordechai, if we could call it a Malchus, there's an echo, there's an aspiration to be like David HaMelech, the highest aspirations of Jewish kingship. There's Yehudi by association. There's B'nai Leia, an aspiration for the ideal, but inherently it's Yosef. Hanukkah, on the other hand, though it's imperfect, it's an imperfect time. It's after Torah Shabbat. But Hanukkah is not about the body. Hanukkah, on so many levels, is about capturing the neshama and the divine. The very word eight, shmona, the 8 days of Hanukkah, shmona is milash neshama, the 8th dimension of flexum alam and ateva. Think about it on so many levels. Hanukkah was a time when we did have a Beis HaMikdash. We were in Eretz Yisrael. We do have a connection to Pnimius. The Yavanim are threatening Pnimius. They're threatening Ruchnius, right? The theme of Hanukkah is a very interesting one. On one hand, things seem very superficial. There's no more Torah Shabbat. You don't have an obvious portal on high. But there's a more narrow portal. In the realm of Chitzonius, we never really lose our connection to Pnimius, right? And Hanukkah, which is the Yom Tov of Torah Shabbat Peh, which is all about we are going to find Pnimius within ourselves. We're going to develop Torah. The theme of Hanukkah is that even when it seems like we're in the superficial world, the world of Chitzonius, we never lose our portal to the realm of Pnimius, and the world of Pnimius is going to continue to radiate into the Chitzonius world. As the Maral explains, the menorah, which is about revelation, or the menorah, which is a vessel of Torah, is reflecting the Aron vessel of Torah. The Aron is the essence of Torah, Pnimius, which is beyond the space in which man can tread. The menorah on the outside is an external revelation. It's showing the world of Chutz. Yes, there is Pnimius. It's beyond you, but you could touch it. You could be affected by it. You could be elevated by it. That's why I'm going to suggest Hanukkah also has a Yosef connection, because we are in the world of Chitzonius. Yavin is called, the wisdom of Yavin is called Chachma Chitzonius. We're living in non-idyllic times, but the message is, not like on Purim, you're going to find Hashem in the world of Chitzonius, in the world of body, in Persian government intrigues. But it's that even in the realm of Chitzonius you live, you're really connected to the divine sphere. And therefore, the primary protagonists of the story are actually the Bnei Leah, the Hashmonam from Levi. Because really, it's a holiday about turning inward, turning into Alma Deskasia. Yosef, and by the way, not only are the Hashmonam from Leah, right? Yehuda Maccabee and the Tzadikas Yehudas, these are all Yehud names of Hodah, names of Leah, Leah's Mita Hodah. The personas are really Bnei Leah. It's about turning inside, turning internally. Yosef, however, reflects, he's external, that internality is going to turn outwards, that the great divinity of the world which is beyond the world of Leah, right, that doesn't remain hidden away in some chamber and irrelevant when we're in non-idyllic times. The divinity of Torah is not in some ivory tower, irrelevant to an imperfect world, but no, there's a portal of connection. How in the world of Chitzonius, how in the imperfect world, we could still connect to the world of Pnimius of Leah, and that's where Yosef comes into the picture. And as we were discussing last week, the Hanukkah party, virtual Hanukkah party, when Yosef gets together with the Bnei Leah, and there's this notion, Yosef, the outside world, is linking back to the inner world. So therefore, this Hanukkah, which is being fought by the Bnei Leah, the Hashmonam, they have a Yosef connection. Yosef is the Lahava, Yosef is the flame, Yosef is the menorah that is reflecting the Pnimius, which the Bnei Leah, which the Hashmonam stand for, Right? So here we have in our parsha, Yosef includes both Purim and Hanukkah, because both Purim and Hanukkah are times when we're living in an imperfect chitzonistic world, the realm of Yosef. But Yosef's footprint is, in a sense, more integral to Purim, the holiday when exclusively we're in a realm of chitzonism. It's divine even in the body and even in government affairs. The B'nai Le'ah connection, the Yehuda connection, is more tenuous. On the other hand, Hanukkah is the B'nai Le'ah. It's about peace, but that they reflect into the world of Yosef, right? And that is why the actual trigger of all the events in our parsha, and really the last two parshas, right, are the B'nai Le'ah. This time of year, we focus on a source from Leah. It was the B'nai Le'ah, it was Shimon and Levi that sold Yosef down and are the impetus here. And in a sense, Paro's fat cows swallowed by skinny cows, the Gibor and Biyad Chaloshim story, which are the trigger for Paro to turn to Yosef, and hence the Yeshua. Notice that the trigger is, again, B'nai Le'ah-esque, Chashmonam-esque, Giborim B'yad Chaloshim-esque, because the undergirding of the story is really B'nai Le'ah's really Pnimius. But it's going to materialize with a Yosef, right? It's going to materialize with a Yosef, because all the Pnimius, all of the divinity and connection to Pnimius of the B'nai Le'ah is going to have to be reflected through Yosef. And that is the symbolism tonight when we light the menorah, when as a bias, a family, an entity from that world of privacy, we place the menorah outside, or at least at the window, Pesach, Beis, and Mibachutz, we are saying all the Pnimius of Judaism is not in a cold ivory tower detached from this world. It penetrates the outside world. Jews in imperfect places can draw on the deepest realms in Torah, and they can be inspired by the deepest pnimius in Torah to leave a law, to walk stride around proud and with a sense of confidence. Living a very imperfect life in Gaulis, we are buoyed by our connection to a dimension which is beyond. That is the theme of Hanukkah. Afay lachem, Hanukkah.